Hello. Thank you for being so prompt in getting back. It's very, very good to have you back again. You may want to move forward. If you're far in the back, we're going to start with a film. Kim is going to start with a film, and we want to have it loud enough so the people in the back can hear, but not so loud that the people in the front get all blasted away. I'm not going to give a long introduction. I just want to say, in 2010, Kim Rakelma Clutisi.
The Whaler.
What a nice name. Okay. Received the Echo Trust, Eco Trust for Indigenous Leadership. I'm going to stand here so you can just help me along. For her decades of work, listen to just some of the things that were included in that award. Her work as an activist, a political organizer, a cross-cultural interpreter, a teacher, an academic researcher of ethnobotany, a reporter, a photographer, a historian, and an award-winning videographer and producer. I'm going to let you tell what tribe you're from. And we're so glad to have her here with us this afternoon.
Thank you. Should
I? I wanted to, first of all, thank the traditional owners of this land. Can you hear? Is it on? Up higher? Okay. I'm not used to using microphones. I like to just talk loud. Really want to thank the traditional owners of this land for assisting us this morning in a needed ceremony. And if any of you are feeling extremely fatigued, that is part of what happens in our ritual world as these things move. And I want to reassure you of that. We come from a place in Canada that was the last part of the New World to be colonized, so our story is vastly different from what you've heard today. But it has the same result and the same end game and the same purpose and the same history. I want to acknowledge Kwaksi Stala, the last traditionally clan chief of the Kwakiutl people and of the entire Pacific Northwest coast, a man who traces his ancestry back to our creation story of the Kwakiutl and is here in an unbroken chain since the beginning of time. His teachings have been passed on in the same way as they have for 10,000 years plus since his peoples and mine roamed this land in the odd way that the newcomers thought that we did. I want to acknowledge his adopted son, Mak Moisa, Dr. Doug Duer, his first graduate student almost 25 years ago. And as an Indigenous person himself, he was very humbled in all the testing he had to go through in order to become that. It was a cross-cultural feast to try to learn academia and traditional teachings. You're not allowed to ask questions when you're with somebody of his esteemed knowledge. You just have to receive the information as it's offered. And so it became a very difficult thing to do the academic training for the last 25 years. I'd like to acknowledge our dear adopted brother, Kasalid, and relative to Kwaksi Stala, who traveled this long journey with us to be a speaker and understood carefully, spoke with us carefully, traveled with us, traveled through the thunderstorms and the trees falling in front of us, and even the regalia popping out of the car in the freeway as we were driving. In a Volvo, they don't do things like that. They don't have those kind of mistakes. They're very safety-oriented, so we all just said, all right, we'll be nice. We're coming in peace. We're all right. We carried on. I wanted to really take things down because I appreciated so much what has been said, because it's how we live, it's our story. But We're not allowed to leave you in that place of guilt because it's a place that people like to sit and wallow instead of doing the work, but it's not traditionally acceptable at all. So it's convenient, it's helpful, and it's a great place for people to go, but we're not allowed to. I made this film several years ago about what happened in our area, what happened in the Pacific Coast, Northwest Coast, or sort of mid-coast, Pacific Central Coast of British Columbia. What happened here over several centuries happened in a 40-year period. Loss of land, loss of language, loss of children, loss of culture, all took place in a 40-year period. And so it was akin to what happened here, where we're standing. It's akin to what happened to this rapid depopulation in this territory because it was such a central trading place and a place of first contact with the virgin soil diseases. So there were many things that happened that were very, very, very difficult for people to respond to in such a rapid succession. Well, you can imagine my first cut of this film came out it was a little more radical than it is now. And Quaxie Stella and his female counterpart sort of went like this. This is their way to show disdain. And then I realized that I didn't. And I said, so you mean you don't like it? It was like after 3 years of work. And they said, but you've the entire budget. They said, we don't know. Nikki budget, my niece. Masi the budget. What does that mean? And she would say, oh, I don't know. It's a big talk for her. She's just showing off. So I said, okay, what's wrong? And they didn't answer me. And then they finally, after several days, Bill came. We had storyboards pasted everywhere. And they were just commenting on, my use of terminology through all of this. And it was quite leveling and quite a humility thing. And then they quietly said, this is our story. This is his story. You can't tell it that way. You didn't hear him. You didn't understand that if you can't tell it properly, you can't tell it at all. Here is my caution to each and every one of you as you are moving here and from this place. No one in this room is to blame for what happened, but each and every one of us is responsible from now on. Once you have this gift of knowledge of finding a way, as simple as learning the place name of the place where you are, learning the appropriate name of the people that you're with. My name is Ogwilogwa. I am the daughter of the late Chief Iwanuksi, the sister of the clan chief Akwagila, of the Kwagulth Pentlech, of the Kulus clan. This is Quaxie Stella, the firstborn of the firstborn who takes himself and calls himself the clan chief of the Kawadilika clan, which came from the beginning of time. You can remember one of those names when people introduce you, we're on the right path to heal. As you can imagine, it was hard for others to try to do these things. I'm going to show you this film because this was a film made in response to British Columbia celebrating 150 years of a colonial government having been formed in the British Columbia. We were not allowed to say, you're very bad, terrible white people. This isn't the way that it happened. The story had to be told of what happened to these noble people and the way His life was interrupted and was secluded in order to receive knowledge because they knew the change was coming. I can only imagine what that's like. Many of the people in most of the rest of North America are so many generations away from that time that to know somebody who actually lived in that time off the grid, to be secluded, to carry that ancestral knowledge, it's pretty amazing. But it's also interesting how many people want to dismiss it so that the Pan-Indian stuff is what we hear. I want to thank you at age, we'll almost say, almost 87. I want to thank you at your young age to continue to travel and take this long journey from almost the top end of Vancouver Island to be here with us today, because the story is one that's universal. We just had different paths to get to it. The meaning and where we ended up is the same. We just took different paths, and I will talk to you after about the unique way the government of Canada did their deed. And we will talk about that, but I want to talk more about the end game so you understand firsthand this is what people experienced here a few generations ago and still experience with the cry in the heart of all the relocations. We didn't do as much relocation in Canada. We just put people in residential schools and killed the children a lot. Not only their heart and body and spirit, but sometimes physically, as some of my family members, it happened to it. So it was different, but it had the same end result. You see, they studied the Americans and realized that the wars were too costly. That's why the residential schools were built, because they were more economical. This is a story of hope, and it is a story of how traditional people responded in a traditional way to these offenses. This story is like the Salege we did this morning. It's a tear and a cry that will be forever stained on these lands since the beginning of our contact together. But I do not want to leave us in that place of sorrow. And that's why I asked for this to come back, because in order to begin this path together, my learned speakers earlier today were very right in saying what they have said. You had to hear the truth and the history in order to understand what the old people did here to race against time, to save what they could and what they felt was important. You can imagine old people in their 70s paddling in a dugout canoe, living in a shack with no amenities throughout the year with this child from the age of 4 on, and kept him hidden the entire time that the police boats were just grabbing the children from the shores. What happened in Canada happened in a very short period of time. And so our story is different, I continue to say. We have only just begun in June to begin what they call the reconciliation program. I want to tell you a story about that. In honor of that happening, my late father and I spent decades in the House of Commons with prime ministers and ministers of Indian Affairs begging them not to do that, saying, you have an obligation to correct what was wrong. You have an obligation to look hard at what the foundational work that happened in order for this to work. We had a superintendent for Indian Affairs from the beginning of the turn of late 19th century till well into the time the anti-potlatch laws were successful, who wrote poems about the vanishing noble savage at night, and during the day he wrote legislation to ban our identity, our religion, and our potlatch. His name was Duncan Campbell Scott. He's a very good friend of many of the prime ministers, or a relation or something, but he was a very odd man. And some of the things that he has said, and he researched carefully what was successful and not successful here before they implemented what they did. And the residential schools, taking the children away, was what had to happen in order to break the back of the people, because they were too strong and embedded, because their systems were too strong. They were here too. They were all across North America. We were just later in the game. So they encountered us at a different time with their government structures. Doesn't mean we were more powerful. We were just at the peak of our game. Duncan Campbell Scott was just a man. But he was a God-fearing man that did this in the name of God. Well, if you saw those writings, and it was hard to read, I apologize. I scoured the writings from the old people that were not literate, but they gave what they could to ascribe to counter the rules of the anti-potlatch laws. Don't put us in jail. We are doing precisely what you're trying to teach us to do in the churches. And they were profoundly gifted in the way that they expressed that in the early 1900s. I invite all of you to read the potlatch records of that time, because people don't understand that our people fought back, but they did with the traditions. They didn't fight back with a war. They fought back with their teachings and their traditions and their reasoning. And I don't know which way to fight back is better. I just think that the way this game unfolded was so wrong that it overpowered people. So the people went underground in many areas. They went underground and they worked very hard to maintain what they can. And on Vancouver Island, we still have remnants of our past, but I really stress that it's remnants of the past. When the first diseases came to our area, and there's evidence that that too was deliberate, and there's evidence too that some of the infected people were moved around in places like Fort Victoria. They were denied the rudimentary, it was against the law to give the rudimentary smallpox immunization. It was very rudimentary at the time, but they were denied that. So the depopulation happened in the late 1860s, rapid, but it had begun before that with the maritime fur traders bringing measles and mumps and other virgin soil diseases a few decades before. But the big, big depopulation happened in the 1860s. The reserves were quickly gazetted in the 1870s across the whole province of British Columbia without one treaty being signed. There were a couple of colonial treaties that happened because the fur trader, James Douglas, had to in order to maintain control of all of the resources of Vancouver Island, and he had to maintain power over the colonies of the forts. Had to maintain and continue to have the supply of spruce for the tall ships and the rapidly new industry of coal. And then when gold came, that's when BC became interesting to the Canadian government, and that's when Confederation was dreamed of and the colonial government expanded to mainland British Columbia. Loss of people, loss of land. And then immediately after the residential schools, I mean, immediately after the depopulation, the culture was outlawed. Religion was outlawed. And immediately after that, the children were forcibly taken to residential school. There are still some 5,000 children unaccounted for, missing in unmarked graves somewhere. And so to mark the reconciliation, I registered my uncle's death, who died in the residential school in Port Alberni, witnessed by his siblings for speaking the language. And these things were commonplace. We don't have accurate records of them. But they had an effect. We did not want to go through, many traditional people did not want to go through the reconciliation process because it did not fix the people. It was like ripping off a Band-Aid. And a lot of the reconciliation processes are meant to heal, and forgive me for saying this, they're meant to heal people's bad feelings about what happened to the people. When I applied to do some cultural restoration work from two residential healing funds with the United Church and the Anglican Church, I was told there's no component to help the Anglican congregation or the United Church congregation. And I said, then it's not a healing fund. I'm not here to heal the congregation. I'm here to heal the people by restoring the things that were lost as a result of taking the children away for so many generations. And so I beg you to think about this. Think in the bottom of your heart of the things that can be done, not to heal yourselves. That is your job, to fix yourself in this one. And I apologize to say that bluntly. But I beg you to support things that Aboriginal people are doing to try to restore the waterways, restore the fishing grounds, restore the cultural and the language programs, or restore the tribal affiliations. Whatever the issues are locally, please, we don't need that decided again in the healing process. And that is what has been happening in Canada. Everyone was encouraged to tell their story. There was a lot of counseling happen. Let's talk about all the terrible things that happened to you. And there is now a lovely museum that houses it all. I can't tell you what it's like in the communities these days, this summer, as a result of it. And minus the teachings to help make you right again, as we did this morning, minus those kind of teachings every day to work on, it doesn't work. It's difficult. It's very, very difficult to work through that. Your job is to know the facts. Your job is to know the history, all of us collectively, and to learn a new language. I appreciated many of the things that the last speaker said, because there are many truths in that. Learn a new language so that we can speak together respectfully. Don't be so politically correct that you're afraid to sit down and talk to us, because that happened at lunch. We're sitting there for a long time, and I said, oh my God, I think everyone's afraid to sit with us. But it didn't. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much for joining us. It was very nice. But think about those things and find ways to walk through. There's so much more to say. I'm not going to show this film after dinner, but I needed to show it today because he said we have to help to find other paths to talk. This is a very hard subject to talk about. First time we screened this, He brought some young singers. We've screened it at the university with a lot of our young people were there. We brought some young singers to sing what we called a mamalulakwala afterwards. Well, one of the young men couldn't sing. He was crying so hard. He said, "Oh my God, I thought we just fought a lot. I thought that's just what Indians did. I had no idea that all of this happened to us." So our own people need to know that this is the end game of colonization, the talk about who's in, who's out, the talk about who belongs, who doesn't, the talk about quantum. You know, we've put on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feasts and potlatches. I've never heard once this chief or others ask what your quantum is. As long as he says, the host has said, this is, you belong here. That's it. That's it. Never heard it. My mother is a descendant of many Lutheran ministers from Iceland. And that was quite a combination. In their world, there were English Icelanders. There were Indians and Icelanders, and everybody else were foreigners. Because you grew up in a small colony in Manitoba. And so it was, as he spoke about, a very different land and world. So I understand much of this talk, and I understand the conflict. But it doesn't change what our obligations are. This discussion is only a beginning, and I want to remind you of what we did this morning. There are budgie cords attached to all obligations that we give each other, even in family. We recently stripped a family member for being naughty, and that does happen. That doesn't mean it happens all the time, but it means it happens. It's not just, and it's not a hug an Indian day either. It's not about being politically correct, but it is about finding a new language so we can be very, very kind to each other. Remember humor. And remember that to be kind to each other, we're overcoming much of this. Many of us have used traditions to do that. I'm going to just leave it there for now and ask whether or not Kasalid or Makmuisa or Kwaksi Stella want me to add any more. Excuse me. You need me to say any more? No. That's how we work. You're not a free agent. Like you think that way. I know. I understand the Jesuits' angst about women. I took my elder, who was my teacher, Daisy, to a woman's studies class. She'd booked it to talk, and I said, I really don't think my nephew want to go there. And I said, you know, it's kind of about women's lib. And she goes, what's that all about? And I said, well, I really don't think we should go to a women's studies class. I don't think you'll fit there. They just want to talk about how oppressed we are as women. She said, let them try. And there, she's the only one I see him terrified of. It's just, there's just a look, you know, trained women. We want to just say we shifted a little of what we wanted to do just because of the immense sadness that we felt moving forward to come here. We have a few village sites that are like that. Kwaksi Stella still speaks a little Chinook. His people came here to trade before the time of contact. We may have relatives here. I don't know. He hasn't been that open. Doug will have to do some research. He's blushing. My message from him was, it's getting too heavy. Make people laugh. They have to open their hearts again. So he will be in the middle of something really sacred. And he will just pull it out of his back pocket. And I'll go, oh, my God. Here we go. And I have to pretend that I'm upset with that. But I'm loving it, too. We couldn't have felt more the need to come. Because we can't travel very often these days. And we were compelled to come. And I really thank you all. But more than anything, we have to thank the ancestors of this land, the traditional owners of the land. And the word owner is just a really thin word. We really need to thank the people of the land. It has been a deep and great honor, and we appreciate that we're allowed to be who we are here, and we're allowed to help a little. Thank you, Greg, for helping us. Thank you, Brenda, for helping. It was more than we had prayed to happen. Thank you, thank you, thank you for everyone's counsel and all the help that they've given. From the bottom of our heart, we wish you all to go in peace and learn a new language. And it's maybe just today we'll call it Hug an Indian Day, but never, not any other time. Allah Kesla.
Please be back here by 7. And thank you so much for today.
I think their nets got stuck when they were pulling the salmon in. So we're really honored today to have so many wonderful people. And we actually have some guests who came here all the way from Korea. I've been learning a lot lately about Koreans. They are the indigenous people of that land. They can go back thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and it's the same DNA. One of the things that I've been if I could say there's one thing that I've learned that has impressed me the most, it's that Korea has never started a war in the history of their land. There's something to learn there. But these are the indigenous peoples. And they brought their indigenous instruments, their drums, which Mr. Guan is going to come out and talk about what those mean and tell you. We got about 15 minutes, and he's going to tell you about how their people went through a lot of the same thing that our people did with the Japanese, cutting their hair, stopping speaking their language, taking away their ceremonies, those things. So we have a lot in common that we may not realize. Mr. Guan, would you come? Thank you. This is Seth Martin. He's a, used to be a local musician, but now he's in Korea. And Seth is living out there, and he's actually arranged the tour that they're on. So.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Mr. Guan. I'm from Korea. 나는 I can speak English. I cannot speak English well. So I can Korean. 우리의 Korean traditional instrument member 4. 꽹과리, 징, 장구, 북. 이 네 가지 악기는 자연의 소리를 닮았습니다. 하늘의 천둥 소리, 비 소리, 땅에서 올라오는 생명의 소리, 그리고 대지를 감싸는 바람의 소리. 한국 사람들은 자연을 사랑합니다. 그리고 평화를 사랑합니다. 한 번도 다른 나라를 공격하지 않았습니다. 하지만 불행하게도 한국은 일본의 침략을 받았습니다. 무려 36년 동안 나라를 빼앗겼습니다. 일본 사람들은 한국의 사람들을 잡아가고 죽였습니다. 어쩌면 인디언과 같을지도 모르겠습니다. 하지만 한국 사람들은 끊임없이 저항했습니다. 싸우고 또 싸웠습니다. 우리의 자유를 위해서. For freedom. 하지만 일본 사람들은 끝까지 싸우는 우리 한국 사람들을 대신해서 우리의 문화를 파괴했습니다. 한국의 문화를 파괴했습니다. 우리의 악기에는 꽹과리와 징은 금속으로 만들어졌습니다. 일본 사람들은 우리의 악기를 빼앗아서 그들의 총알로 바꿔 전쟁을 위해 쓰였습니다. 우리는 전통의 문화를 잃었습니다. 하지만 끝까지 포기하지 않고 싸웠습니다. 1945년 미국의 원자폭탄으로 우리는 자유를 얻었습니다. 미군은 우리에게 자유를 주는 것으로 알았습니다. 하지만 미군은 우리에게 자유를 준 것이 아니라 또 다른 점령군이었습니다. 또한 우리의 문화를 파괴했습니다. 일본은 우리의 말을 쓸 수 없게 하였고 우리의 이름을 쓸 수 없게 하였고 우리의 문화를 짓밟았습니다. 어쩌면 미국도 역시 또 다른 방법으로 우리의 문화를 파괴해가고 있습니다. 인디언이 미국에서 다치고 죽고 우리의 문화를 잃어갔듯이 우리의 전통 문화도 점점 힘을 잃어가고 있습니다. 하지만 우리는 끝까지 지켜낼 것이고 우리의 문화를 자랑하는 세대가 영원히 사랑하고 지켜갈 것입니다. 인디언 한국의 친구입니다. 똑같은 상황입니다. 인디언이 미국에서 지치고 빼앗기고 쫓겨났던 것처럼 우리 역시도 마찬가지입니다. 미군이 새로운 기지를 건설하기 위해서 우리의 농민들은 자기 땅을 빼앗겼습니다. 평화로운 섬 제주에서는 지금 새롭게 미군의 기지가 만들어지고 있습니다. 우리는 행복하지 않습니다. 하지만 포기하지 않습니다. 인디언이 끝까지 자신의 문화를 지키고 싸우듯이 한국인들도 우리의 평화를 위해서, 우리의 땅을 위해서, 우리의 문화를 위해서 계속 싸우고 지켜갈 것입니다. Thank you. You're my friend. Thank you.
미스터 Guan is a very brave, he has a long history in Korea and the democracy movement and the back to the land movement and fighting against globalization and the same manifest destiny reaching further out across the water. And he has the scars and the bleeding to prove that. One reason that he doesn't speak English, he actually does speak English but doesn't wish to in light of what we're talking about. And so I have helped prepare an extremely poor and pathetic translation of what he just said to you. But since we are sharing English, one of the reasons we learn, I have the great honor of being a teacher and a learner at Mr. Kwan's school. After several years in the labor movement, he is also a traditional drumming master that tries to help students find a way to escape from the new technological monster that is Korean industry and Samsung and the FTA and the U.S. military. And one of the ways he does that is by bringing students back to nature stories and to original stories of Korea's origins and to traditional drums. And so we're going to share that with you. This is the poor translation I just warned you about. So here we go. We are from Korea. We are Seonmunbak Mountain School. Seonmunbak means outside the gate. Our school is in Namansansong. It is an ancient fortress. We are outside the wall. The fortress was used for centuries to defend our people against Japanese invasions. And now we live outside the gate, literally and symbolically. Our school is for those who are outside the mainstream. We are from Korea. There is no North or South Korea. Just Korea. I will now introduce Korean traditional instruments, Pungmul Nori drums. There are four instruments. The first is Kengari. It is the sound of thunder. The second instrument is the changu. It is the sound of the rain. The third instrument is the bok. It is the sound of plants growing up through the ground after winter. The last instrument is the jing. It is the sound of the wind. In the past and today, when we play pungmul together, just like the farmers in history, the forces of nature are connected, and we are connected with them, and we are nature too. Korean people love nature because we love peace. In Korean history, we have fought many wars to protect our home with Japan, China, Mongolia, USA, but we have never started a war with other countries. In our history, Japan has attacked us many times. For 36 years at one time, they stole our land and colonized us directly. They attacked us and tried to take our land repeatedly. They stole Korea and they destroyed our culture. After they killed many of us, we continued to keep fighting. When they saw that we wouldn't stop fighting, then they changed their tactics and decided to systematically go for our culture instead. They cut our traditional hair. They made us use Japanese names, and we were punished for speaking Korean. We were not allowed to speak Korean. We were not allowed to play our traditional music. Japan took our metal instruments, the gwangari and the jing, and they melted them to make bullet shells. Many of them were used against us. Then when the U.S. Army dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, so many innocent people died. It looked like freedom might be coming. In 1945, we suddenly had freedom. But the U.S. Army in Korea was not for our freedom. It was there for a different reason. The U.S. Army became another destroyer in Korea for their own benefit. U.S. and Russia divided Korea in half. So many tanks and bombs and military came into Korea and are still there. Massive U.S. military team spirit training operations still go on in Korea today, every year. The military campaigns and camps pushed out the farmers from our lands. Now it is very difficult to celebrate our real culture, our tradition, and our music and religion. Now, even on our peace island, Jeju Island, there is a new base. The U.S. is building a new naval base on top of a farming village, even though the villagers have said no, and the grandmothers and grandfathers are chaining themselves to equipment and putting themselves in the roadway. We will not give up our peace. We will try harder, more and more, for peace and for one Korea. I hope you agree. Thank you. We are struggling to save our history and home, too. When I see you today, and when I learn about your history, I am so sad, and I think about the similarities in our stories. Native Americans and Koreans are friends, and we should be friends. We are both fighting for our land, our people, our culture, our religion, our history. We are both working for peace and truth. Thank you for sharing with us. We want to share our drums with you to show solidarity and to give you hope.
Thank you very so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.